Good morning, church. Before I start, today we're going to have a little look at Genesis 19 and a bit of a look at Lot. But before we start, I'd just like to tell you a little bit about my life in Romania and especially about one guy. So I went to Romania for 5 months in 2002 and just never left. I'm not very good at counting. I've still got some, I've still got a few more months to go before I finish. And one of the things that we do, we work with a group of differently abled adults who grew up in an orphanage in Romania. They have HIV and they live in a house. And they're literally the most fantastic people you're ever likely to meet. And one person in particular, whose surname in Romanian means old woman. And he literally is an old woman. Like, if you're trying to leave the house with Baba, like, okay, and you can say to him, right, we've got to go, like, it's time to go. He's like, yeah, fine. And, like, literally, like, 35 minutes later, he's still putting on his, trousers, like, doing up his every single button on his shirt, gets to the top. He realizes that the buttons aren't quite aligned, so he's undoing every single button. Like, it literally takes hours to go anywhere with him. And when he walks, there's no rush. There's literally no rush. He will walk slowly. You're down the street, and you're like, Baba, like, we've got to be there like 10 minutes ago. He's like, yeah, I'm rushing. And he kind of slowly kind of carries on walking. Like, and he's 35, like he's in his prime. Like, but it doesn't matter. Nothing will make Baba rush unless he sees one of the other ladies in the house having something that he would like. Mainly, like a cup of Coke. That's basically, what he wants. If someone has got a cup of a Coca-Cola and he feels he likes it, he can then literally, he could probably, go 100 meters in about 3 seconds. That absolutely storms it. Like, and it's like, when we've asked you to rush, like, why can you not rush? And I think he will rush when he wants to rush. And I just thought, I was reminded of this when I was looking at Genesis 19 this week, and we see Lot and his family really slowly leaving Sodom. But when they wanted to, when they left the town, they could get really quickly out and they could get to where they wanted to be. And as I studied this passage, I thought to myself, I'm a lot like Lot. There's a lot of my life which I can see in his life. And so today as we look at this story, and what I don't want us to do is end in a deep depression looking at Lot and realizing that we are just as bad as him. I don't want to go there. It's not good for a Sunday morning. It rained all day yesterday. We need some joy today. So I really want to look at God and his role in this story. I want to see, God, how he brings a triumphant end to what is a really kind of hard story to start with. And so, as we've celebrated the Lord's Supper, and we know there is always victory. We know that God will always win. Even when we're in the depths of despair, even when we're really far down, we know that God will always bring back a victory. So just before we start, I just want to kind of go back and, for those of us, just to kind of basically kind of find out who Lot is. So Lot basically is the nephew of Abraham. Abraham has been called by God into this new country, and Abraham, being Abraham, like goes 98% of the way to doing what God asked him to do. God said, "Leave everything behind, leave your family, and come with me." So Lot's like, "Right, leave all my family behind. I'm just going to take my nephew. That's it. Just that." Brings Lot with him, and Lot lives with him and experiences what Abraham experiences. He sees Abraham's life changed by meeting God. And then in chapter 13, he sees the way that Abraham settles an argument. There's an argument between their servants, and they realize that they've become too rich to stay together. They need, more space. And so they basically say, right, we're going to have to split up. Abraham's going to have to go in one direction, and Lot's going to go in another direction. And we see the two differences between Lot and Abraham. Abraham in chapter 13 spends most of chapter 13 looking at his feet and just thinking, oh, I don't want to leave Lot. Like, he's my nephew, he's my family, I don't want to leave him. And Lot's there, head up, looking, where's the best land? Where can I go? Where can I get richer? Where's the best place to be? And so Lot chooses to go that way. And so we see in chapter 13, verses 12 and 13, it says, Abraham lived in the land of Canaan while Lot lived among the city of the plains and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. So that's where we know what happened. That's where they are. And so we've seen in chapter 13 that he's living in the proximity of Sodom and Gomorrah. By the time we get into chapter 19, we don't know much what happens in that time, but you know, everything lot, but we know that he is finally sitting in the gate. So we see that Abraham, that Lot isn't just sitting on the edge of the city. He's sitting in the gate. And when you first read this, you think, oh, he's just by the edge. Like, it's fine. He's, you know, he's not in the middle. But sitting in the gate basically means he is sitting, you know, with the council of leaders. He's not just living in their town. He's become one of them. He's become one of the leaders in this town, which is described in 18 verse 20 as a city whose sin is very grave. So how easy is it for us to do the same thing? How easy is it for us to be living in a community of believers? And due to one thing or another, maybe we don't agree with the way, you know, that they do worship, or we don't agree with the way they pray, or, you know, there's a slight kind of argument between people. We just take a step back and we think, you know what? Okay, I can go on Sunday, but I can't be part of the home group anymore. Like, I can't be with these people. They don't believe the same thing I do. And we take a step back. We take a step back. And we take a step back. And so rather than being surrounded by people who believe, we find ourselves surrounded by people who no longer believe. And we find ourselves influenced by their principles rather than our principles influencing their lives. And so how easy is it for us to do exactly the same thing that Lot himself did? He was living with Abraham. They split up. He was living near Sodom. And slowly, 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 he made his way to be living in Sodom, and he became like them. And this is very easy to happen. My eldest daughter, who was here last week, Ioana, so I've spoken to her since her birth in English. I've always spoken to her in English. She will refuse to speak to me in English in Romania. She will answer me in Romanian constantly. But when we get to England, she answers me in English. But wherever we are, depending who we're with, depending on what her English accent sounds like. When she was tiny, obviously, just hearing my accent, she had a very English accent. Then, as she grew up, she would meet her cousins. Now, my brother lives in Canada with his wife, and when she meets them, she sounds decidedly American. I'm like, okay. And then, when she's with our cousins from Nottingham, she sounds like she's from Nottingham. And for the whole of the last year, we've had Ukrainians living in our house, and we all spoke English. And she sounds incredibly Russian. And I'm like, Ioana. She's like, it's okay, I'm speaking English. But she can obviously, she's like a chameleon. She takes on the accent of whoever she's with. I have no idea why, no idea kind of what her English accent is anymore. I don't know what it is. But it's very easy for her to take on the accent of the people that she's with. And so when he was with Abraham Lot, he witnessed all the amazing things that God was doing in Abraham's life. He saw that Abraham was called out of his country, that God had saved them in Egypt. He witnessed Abraham going off to fight a war with far fewer people just to save Lot. And then when he was allowed to take, you know, part of the spoils of war, he just said, give it all to God. All the glory deserves to be on God, not me. And Lot stood by Abraham during all these times and witnessed this. But then when he took a step back, he found himself drawn into a society based on sin. And not only did he find himself drawn in, but he found himself living in that society. Sadly, there's not time to go into it today, but this week, if you get a chance to go back and read chapter 19 and even the chapters leading up to it, and just think to yourself, what are the signs that Lot had that he was going in the wrong direction? We don't normally, like a kind of a swimming pool, kind of run, jump on the diving board and leap into sin. We're like, it's, you know, more of a question that we edge towards the swimming pool, we edge towards the swimming pool, and then we're just thinking, is it going to be cold, going to be warm, we dip a toe in, feels okay, we go in with an ankle, might go up to a knee, and then suddenly we find ourselves swimming in the swimming pool. And that's exactly the same with Lot. So as we go away this week, maybe just something to have a think about is, what are the things that I do that can help me slip into this life of sin? What are the warning signs that I need to look out for in my life? And for every single one of us, it'll be something different. Every single one of us is fighting and battling a different sin in our life. And so maybe for me, it's one thing, and for you guys, it's another thing, but we need to be aware, where is the slippery slope starting? I'm really sorry the introduction is probably longer than the actual talk, but it's okay. It'll be really short, I promise. So we see here at the beginning of chapter 19, and I'm just going to read you the first three verses. It says here, "The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. 'My lords,' he said, 'please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way early in the morning.' 'No,' they said, 'we will spend the night in the square.' But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and enter his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate." This looks very much like the way that Abraham also hosted the three angels that came to him. He's hospitable, he invited them in, he made them food, and they ate together. But as I read this, knowing what was going to happen next, alarm bells went off in my head. And I thought to myself, where am I faking it as well? Where am I just going through the motions? It's very easy to come to church on Sunday and look as if you're living this perfect life, but where am I just going through the motions and living, as it were, a Christian life, but actually there's no connection between me and God? And Lot seems to be doing very well at the beginning. We think, okay, he's doing fantastic. Like, he's taken these angels in. He's been very hospitable. He's made them exactly what they're supposed to have made. And then, as things get bad, we begin to see the real Lot. So the town comes to him. They're banging on Lot's doors, demanding him that one of their leaders let the men out of the house and so that they can have their evil way with them. And what is his solution? If this evening you're in your house and people are banging on your door, demanding that you, you know, allow someone else to come out of their house, is this your answer? Just have a look in verse 7 and 8. "And he said to them, 'No, my friends, do not do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who've never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like to them, but you can't do anything to these men, for they have come under the protection of my roof.'" I don't know how many of you have daughters. I don't know how many of you have young daughters. I'm guessing, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say for everyone, but I'm hoping, in fact, that if something bad happened, you wouldn't think to yourselves, "Oh, fantastic. Got a couple of daughters here. You know, oh, fantastic. Let's just send them out. You know, the men can do what they like to them. You know, at least these people will be fine." So we see Lot in his answer to this solution. We see that the problem for him is when his back is up against the wall, he doesn't choose wisely. He doesn't choose to protect his family. He doesn't choose to be noble. He chooses to be evil and wicked, like the men of Sodom. He chooses to give away his two daughters in the town. So how does he come to this decision? How does he possibly think this is the right decision in this situation? In case you're wondering, it's never the right decision to give your daughters away to an angry mob. If this happens to any of you ever in your life, the answer is always no. Do not give your daughters away to an angry mob. But we look at that and we see how he starts acting like Abraham at the beginning of the chapter, taking them in, being hospitable, and just a few verses later, he's choosing to do this evil thing. And so for us as well, it's so easy. It's so easy to think we're on the right track. It's so easy to think we're living the right Christian life until problems and stresses and strains come into our life. Until time, you know, things happen that we can no longer control, and we start thinking, what can I do? Where can I go? When we found out that Louisa was pregnant with Mikey, obviously great joy. Until the first blood test. We go to the doctor, and the doctor says, "I'm really sorry, there's something seriously wrong with the baby. You're going to have an abortion." So it's kind of six weeks into the pregnancy. So we were like, okay, early days, like, you know, we're going to pray about it and, you know, we're going to kind of carry on. We don't believe that abortion is the right way. So the doctor's like, okay, fantastic. This kind of carried on. Every single time we went to the doctor was saying, yes, there's a serious problem with the baby. That was in February. In Easter of that year, Louisa's parents sit us down and tell us that Louisa's father has cancer, and it looks like it's not going to be a cancer that's curable.
And so we had this time when we thought to ourselves, God, what have we done? We didn't quite understand where we were going in this situation. And it would have been very easy to kind of end the suffering and just say, you know what, this is going to be the easy option. We want to protect Louisa's health. We want to protect the, maybe it's just worth having the abortion. Maybe there's just too much going on. And I feel very glad now that we said the first thing we're going to do is just sit on our knees in prayer. And we prayed and we fasted and we prayed and we fasted. And Louisa spent a long time in hospital. Ioana would come home every day from play school and say, oh, can we go to the park? And I'd be like, we're just going to have to go and see Mama in hospital first, and then we'll go to the park. And so, we became very kind of close friends with everyone in the hospital. And 8 months after Louisa became pregnant, she gave birth to a completely healthy young boy. Absolutely nothing wrong with him, other than the fact that he supports Man City. That's the only thing that I can... But that's, we're hoping that God will change that too. But God worked in such a way that we can think God can work in these situations. So when we have our backs up against the wall, when we're fighting something, we think we just don't know what to do. And the easier option, would be just to kind of get rid of the evil. Just please, I can't cope in this situation. It's never right. It's never right to think I'll do what the easy option is. God never called you to an easy life. He never called you and said, come to me, it'll be ice cream and strawberries every day. He called you to a life where he said there's going to be hard. He said there's going to be struggles. But also, as we celebrated this morning, we know that he is victorious over those hardships. We know that he is victorious over those struggles. So sadly, we can't work through the story verse by verse, otherwise we would all miss our lunch and then people start getting angry. So I don't want that to happen. I don't want an angry mob to appear here in front of me today. But it's just one more thing that I would really love to highlight from Lot's life, and it kind of really spoke to me personally. So we rejoin the story in verse 15. What's happened now, basically, is Lot has been trying to persuade his family, it's time to get out, it's time to go, come on. And he goes to his son-in-laws, and they're like, yeah, no. They're just like Baba getting ready in the morning, every kind of button. No, it's fine, we've got plenty of time. And eventually, the two angels have to come to him, and they're like, we've got to come, we're going out. So in verse 15, it says this. With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, hurry, take your wife and your daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished. When he hesitated, the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters and led him safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. As soon as they brought them out, one of them said, flee for your lives, don't look back, and do not stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains, or you will be swept away. But Lord said to them, no, my lords, please. Your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you have shown great kindness to me in sparing my life. But I cannot flee to the mountains. The disaster will overtake me there, and I will die. Look, here is a town near enough to run to. It is small. Let me flee to it. It is very small, isn't it? And then my life will be spared. So we see that Lord has been saved. We see that God has done this amazing thing in his life. And suddenly, we see Lot resisting. He's like, oh, thank you so much for doing this. But all the way there, I've got to go. Wouldn't it just be easier for me to just kind of, live in this little town? And it's going to be easy. And we, so often we're the same. So often we're resisting change when God is calling us out. And he doesn't just call us out halfway. He doesn't just call us out a little bit of the way. He calls us out the whole way. And he says, this is where I want you to be. This is what I want you to be doing. And so a question that I've been asking myself all week is, Jesus has come to give me an abundant life. How much am I not stepping into it? How much am I taking half a step and then saying, yeah, Jesus, this is enough. This is all I've got time for. This is all I can do. I can't do anymore. And Jesus is saying, no, I'm calling you out to this life here. There's about 4 or 5 more steps to go. And I'm like, okay, next year I'll take another half step. And then I'm not living the life that Jesus has prepared for me. I'm living the life that I think I should be doing. So where are we like Lot? Where are we standing there thinking, oh, I can't. I can't do that. I can't do what I've been asked to do. And so as we go away today, it's just one of the things that I've been thinking about now and that I would also like you guys to think about. And finally, as chapter 19 ends, it's a really sad end for Lot. It's a sad end to his story. It's a scene of Lot, wine, and his daughters. And this is the last time that we hear about Lot in Genesis. We don't hear about him anything else. We don't know really what happens to him, but he's become a man who's influenced by the bad decisions that he has made. And I'm sure that he ends life sad and lonely, surrounded by those bad decisions that he's made. And so if we stop there and we said, this is where the story ends, sadly, you'd probably all go home and you wouldn't have the appetite to eat. You'd be crying into your, kind of, into your roast chicken thinking, oh, what are you going to do? Who invited this man to come and speak? It's just, but it's okay. Because there's one thing of the story that we haven't touched on yet. When God sent somebody to save Sodom, when God sent somebody to save Lot, what did he send? He sent two angels. Did he send these two angels because Lot was so strong and so powerful and so great that one angel couldn't possibly take him? Even though one of the angels could possibly destroy the whole town, one of the angels couldn't possibly take Lot. And I don't think it is. We know that in 2 Peter 2:7, that God saw Lot as righteous. He sent two angels because he loved God. He loved Lot that much. He's like, I can't send just one angel. I just love him so much, I'm going to send two. And that's amazing for Lot. But you are even more special. You are even more special than Lot. And if you think about Lot, where he was living and what he was doing, you might think to yourself, well, you know, I'm just like Lot. And for you, God hasn't sent two angels, but he sent his only son. His only son to die for you and to die on the cross. And so your story doesn't end where you are now. Your story doesn't end in the bad decisions like Lot that you're making. Your story doesn't end when you're thinking like, oh, what can I do? Your story begins on the cross. The life that Jesus has created for you, and you might not have stepped into it yet. You might still be thinking, it's a bit of a way to go. I can't make that step yet. You might be stepping into it and thinking, this is scary. Life back there was better. Or you might be stepping into it and living it and thinking, this is the life that Jesus has prepared for me. And so, as we leave it today, what can we do with this? Are we going to look at ourselves and think, I am just like Lot? I am just like Lot because I'm making bad decisions and I'm doing bad things. But if you are just like Lot, there is hope. Because God has sent Jesus to pull you out of that sin. God has sent Jesus to pull you out of where you are and set you up high on a mountain, and so you can live to praise him. Exactly like we were talking about this morning. Just sing and praise with joy because we know where we have been saved from. We know where we have come from and we know where we are now. And also to look at ourselves and think, God, where am I resisting you? Where am I like Lot in the fact that I'm trying to negotiate with you? I'm trying to say, you know what? I would rather be here than I would be there. One of the things that I find absolutely amazing about Genesis when you read through it and study it is you see how God blesses people in certain places. Most people say to me, it's time to leave Romania. It's time to go. Like, you know, 20 odd years, that's enough. It's, you know, my mom and dad are like, isn't it time to come home? You know, my sisters and, you know, and even my kids are saying, isn't it time to leave Romania? Like, can't we go and live in England? And you know what? I think at some time you just think, when God calls you to be in a certain place, and he calls you and he blesses you in that place, and he's called you to be in that place, you absolutely know it. And it's easy to resist. It's easy to say, oh, oh, it would just be much easier like this. Or life would be better doing this. Or life would be better over there. But when God calls you to be in a place and blesses you in that place, do not leave that place. Stay there and stay in God's blessings. Because Lot, when he left the place he was supposed to be, when he left the place that God had said, go up here on that mountain and you can live there, Lot was like, I've got a better idea. I'm going to go and live in this town. And it's fine, it's small, it's okay. And what Lot thought was okay ended up a very sad end for him. So hopefully today when you go home, you won't be left crying into your roast chicken and thinking, oh, I'm just like Lot. But hopefully we'll go home and we'll think, you know what? I too am like Lot. But I too am like Lot because Lot was given two angels to save him. But I've been saved by the Son of God. Amen.